This episode of the Tech Central podcast is brought to you by Pinnacle, Africa's top ICT distribution business, delivering the exceptional every time. I'm Duncan McLeod and you're listening to the Tech Central podcast. It's my great pleasure today to welcome Fazam Ehsani back to the podcast. I interviewed Fazam last year on the podcast, and it was one of the most fascinating discussions we've had to date. It certainly was one of my very favorite podcasts. We spoke about the history of money, the rise of cryptocurrencies, and their potential to change the world. If you haven't heard it yet, I highly recommend going back to listen to that discussion. I'll include a link to that discussion in the show notes for this episode. At the time, Fazam was blockchain lead at RMB, but he returns to the podcast today in an entirely new capacity as CEO of Valor.com, a brand new cryptocurrency trading platform. Fazam, welcome back.
Thank you so much. Great to see you again.
Great to see you too. So tell me about Valor.com. How long have you been planning this and what's the idea behind it?
Sure. So Valor.com is a crypto trading platform at the moment. The vision is larger than that. But at the moment, it is a South African-based platform that has over 50 different cryptocurrencies that customers can buy and sell, store and transfer. And we've got a few nifty features that are kind of first in the market for South Africa, Africa, and most of the world. So we're very excited about it. We only launched on Thursday, so about 4 days ago. But we're very, very excited about it, yeah.
So you've launched in a sort of a kind of a soft launch phase at the moment.
Yeah.
Can so anyone sign up?
Everybody can sign up. So registrations are fully open. We've called it a limited access launch. So anybody can sign up. But once you sign up, you get put onto a onto a waiting list. And then we're going to be rolling out customers or onboarding customers onto the actual platform slowly, just to make sure everything's working very well, there are no hiccups. We're very aware that this is dealing with people's money and monetary value. So we want to make sure, exceedingly sure, that everything's working very well. And actually, a lot of people have said, oh, this is a really bad time to launch because the cryptocurrencies prices are down, etc. We're actually very, very excited to be launching right now. Our belief in this asset class has not changed. And it allows us to kind of come to market in a sane way. At the end of last year, a lot of the cryptocurrency exchanges were closing their doors to new customers because they couldn't handle that. Mm. So we're excited that we can come to market, bring our full glory to the market, and kind of onboard customers slowly but surely in a responsible fashion.
I suppose launching a crypto company in December 2017 would have been a bit like launching a dot-com company in March 2000, right?
Yeah, probably so. Exactly. Exactly. So things have changed a lot since then. But I don't think the fundamentals have, but we can chat about
that. Yeah, we'll dig into that in some detail. But Valor.com, Valor.com, does that stand for anything?
So it's an interesting story of why we chose that name. So first of all, we wanted a name that transcended national borders. And we thought about, we liked Valor, but Valor can obviously be spelt V-A-L-O-U-R or V-A-L-O-R, depending on whether it's a British or American spelling. So we decided, well, we like the name, but we don't like the differences that it causes. So let's get rid of those differences, the O and the U, leaving us with V-A-L-R. And then obviously Valor comes from the word value. Mm-hmm. And we believe that cryptocurrencies will evolve into humanity's preferred form of monetary value. Valor also comes from the word values or moral worth. And we intend to bring a high ethical standard to the industry. And also Valor is associated with courage. And we think that that's what it's going to take to really bring a new financial paradigm to the world, which is what we're attempting to do.
And it's pretty cool that you've got a four-letter .com address.
It is pretty cool, yeah.
Was it available?
Cost us a bit, no. Oh, okay. But it is very cool.
I was about to say just about every four-letter .com must be
exactly
taken by now.
Exactly.
So you've partnered with a US company called Bittrex. Correct. They're a blockchain company. Why partner with them? What do they do? What do they bring to the party?
Great question. So Bittrex is probably the preeminent blockchain platform that's got many, many different types of cryptocurrencies in the United States. When we were looking for a partner, we were looking for someone that, or some entity that had the same outlook towards regulation as we did, had the same outlook towards customer responsibility that we did. So we're not in this to make a quick buck and to disappear, and neither are they. Compliance and regulation is extremely important to us. They were looking for that in a partner for themselves, and we were looking for the same thing. So we really liked their kind of ethics there. It's an interesting stat, but the average age of their founding team is probably about a decade older than the average age of most other exchanges. Now, that's not necessarily a good thing always, but in this case, you know, a lot of their executive team comes from the Department of Justice in the United States and other places high up in the regulatory kind of circles.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that for us, that just kind of showed that they take regulation seriously. They take what they're doing seriously. They were one of the first exchanges to close their doors to the public when things were going out of control because they wanted to do it in a responsible fashion. So we thought they fit the bill very, very well. Why did we want to partner at all? There are many, many people coming to the cryptocurrency space at the moment, even with the dip right now. I was at a conference last week with the regulators, and you know, there were about five new cryptocurrency exchanges that I never even heard of that are coming to market. So the reason we went with that is that I think people underestimate the difficulty of actually launching an exchange. The technical build is not the difficult thing. You know, you've got a matching engine to match orders together. You've got a few databases there, etc. You, of course, there's complexity in holding the cryptocurrencies and integrating into different blockchains. But that's not the real challenge. The real challenge is having a network effect. So if you come to any type of marketplace and there's nobody else that you can interact with, then why are you going to stick around? You're going to go to another marketplace where there are buyers and sellers. Mm-hmm. So we thought, let's actually get liquidity, solve liquidity, which is our big challenge, so that when our very first customer comes onto our platform, they have access to world liquidity markets, worldwide markets. It's very deep, liquid, globally competitive prices, leading security practices that they have, and they were founded by three cybersecurity experts. So these are some of the main reasons we decided to go with a partner. And also our ethos is that in this world, people that collaborate are going to be successful. You know, having cutthroat competition where you're trying to destroy others is not our ethos. And even with other local kind of players in the South African market, our strategy is not to go and try to take market share. Our strategy is actually just to grow the market overall.
So is your platform being built on top of Bittrex technology? Are you developing your own platforms?
How's Great question. So we have our own platform, completely different to Bittrex's. Our back end is standalone. We use their liquidity and we plug into some of their order books. And also we also do partner from a security perspective. But we've built the platform from scratch ourselves. So we obviously integrate with a lot of different providers, but the platform is ours, and mm-hmm. it's proprietarily ours. Built here in South Africa, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which has its challenges, I have to say, you know, because we're incorporated in South Africa, and many people said, oh, you should be really careful about that because the regulations are difficult to deal with. And we have had challenges with things like exchange control, and mm-hmm. and regulations like exchange control are kind of from a past age. They don't really apply today, yet we're just kind of... And I would use the word suffocated by these exchange controls because I think that they are not good for the country. But that's a separate topic altogether. So we're here, we're based here, we're incorporated here, we want to pay taxes here, we want to grow value here, we want to kind of create jobs over here. We're hoping that the regulators will come along with us, and so far they have. But we have no intention of kind of finding the optimal structures to kind of avoid taxes, etc. We're here, we'll pay our fair share. Obviously, we want to also make profits, but we think we can do that from South Africa.
Do you need some sort of license in South Africa to be able to operate an exchange like this?
Not at the moment. So I was at a SARB, a South African Reserve Bank, the central bank over here. There was a workshop a couple of weeks back. We are forming those regulations with the SARB at the moment. And when I say we, I'm talking about the industry. So at the moment, there are no regulations for crypto exchanges. Cryptocurrencies are not recognized as anything at the moment. The SARB has talked about crypto assets, you know, or crypto tokens. SARS, the tax, the revenue collector, has talked about these digital assets of intangible nature, as they say. But right now, there isn't any kind of regulations. However, we anticipate there to be. So even on our platform, we've actually spent a lot of money on KYCing our customers, and KYC is know your customer, to make sure that we can comply with anti-money laundering, counter-terrorist financing regulations. So we're taking the extra steps to anticipate what's coming so that we can be well-situated and kind of well-positioned to be ahead of the regulatory curve, so to speak. And we believe that's the right thing to do.
And the regulations, are they desirable in your view?
So I think so far the steps are in the right direction in South Africa. There isn't going to be any hard and fast rules coming immediately. I think the first thing is that the regulators are thinking about whether exchanges like ourselves should be called accountable institutions. And what that means is, should we be required to know our customers, to report any suspicious activity, things of that nature? And I think we should. And so that's where the regulations seem to be heading. There's nothing official right now at the moment, so things are still in a consultative period. But I think their approach of kind of taking it slowly without coming with any huge blanket regulatory regimes that would be suffocating to the industry and to startups, I think that is the right approach, just to take it slowly, to learn and to implement things as more knowledge is acquired about this space and more experience is acquired as well.
So Valor.com, who are its funders? I see Michael Jordan, the former CEO of FNB, has said he's a backer. Have you gone for an angel funding sort of model at this stage, or more of a venture capital funding model? How's it working?
So we've got a few investors. The two that we have published are Michael Jordan and Bittrex themselves. So Bittrex is an investor as well as a partner. We're very proud of the way we've actually raised money. We raised money with an instrument called a simple agreement for future equity. I believe it's the first time that any entity in South Africa has raised money with such an instrument from offshore investors. And effectively what that means is, or what that instrument does, it says, we're a startup. We have an idea. We really don't know what we're worth. Neither do you as an investor. We do know we have requirements for cash at this stage. So why don't you invest some cash? We will then postpone the valuation of our entity until a future date where there's more information upon which to value our entity. And at that stage, we'll issue shares according to that valuation, but obviously with some benefits to you as an investor, such as the discount or what's called a valuation cap. And all that is technical speak for we will make sure that the investors get a good deal in the future. So they're not investing on par with people at that time. Mm-hmm. They will definitely be get a better deal than that. But it allows us to kind of get off the ground quickly, and it worked with all of our investors. So we're excited about that. And it's the first time that the regulators actually have accepted, or the authorized dealer, I should say, has accepted an inward investment from offshore using such an instrument.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So who is Valor aimed at specifically? Is it across the board, anyone who's interested in cryptocurrencies from ranked beginners all the way through to the advanced crypto traders, or is there a specific target?
So we are aiming at actually, it's a challenging thing, but we're aiming at people on both sides of the spectrum. So new people, beginners, and also advanced traders. And the reason we're doing that is, A, we think that there needs to be a platform that's really seamless, really easy for people that don't really understand what cryptocurrencies are all about. But also for them to have a market to buy, we need people to provide liquidity. And typically those are the advanced traders. Mm. So I think we've done a couple of things that we're very excited about. In addition to having the largest selection of cryptocurrencies from any South African-based platform, we also have a very ingenious referral program. And what that referral program does, it says, if you're a market maker, and the market maker is someone that brings liquidity onto our platform, and when I say liquidity, brings either rands or Bitcoin or Ether for people to have an option to buy. or sell. And
so someone with volume.
Someone with volume. You don't really actually even have to have volume. It's more a term to say, I will bring my, I'll basically put my my Bitcoin or my Rands on a platform for people to have the option of actually buying or selling. And that's opposed to a market taker. A market taker comes to the platform and says, oh, I see certain prices of certain, you know, cryptocurrencies, and I like that price, and I'm going to hit that order on the order book, which means I'm going to take that and do a deal, and that takes liquidity away from the order book. So what we've done, which is actually, I think I'm very excited about, we're the first kind of institution that's introduced negative fees for market makers. So what that means is when you come and you put, say, one Bitcoin onto the platform as a market maker, you can actually leave the platform with more than one Bitcoin in your pocket, because we'll be paying you if that order gets hit, or if someone else does a deal with you, we will pay you some of the fees that we charge the market taker. So this is a first for South Africa, for Africa and most of the world. And the reason we're doing it is that, to my earlier point about needing liquidity, we believe that if some of our customers help us and bring liquidity, we should incentivize that and pay people and remunerate that people for that. So it's kind of a novel kind of concept of having fees below zero. And we'll see what the market likes. I think so far it's taken off quite well. We've got a lot of positive feedback. So that's the one thing, the reward for market makers.
Well, what's the, I mean, you're going to be paying people to trade on your platform in essence. Is that a long-term sustainable model?
So every trade has a maker and a taker. So just like every trade has a buyer and a seller, mm-hmm. right? So we charge the takers. And currently that price is 0.75%. And then we take some of that 0.75% and we give it to the maker
at
0.1%. So effectively, we net 0.65%. Mm-hmm. So it's a very transparent model. We believe in having a very transparent fee structure. So we're not trying to, there's no pyramid schemes or anything like that here. It's a very sustainable kind of model. And also, in addition to that, our referral reward, in the spirit of kind of giving back to our customers, when you refer someone onto our platform, you get a 15% discount on your trading fees. And then if you refer two or more people, then what we'll do is take 10% of the trading fees of whoever you've referred and pay you that 10% up to a cap of 1,500 per referral. So we're really hoping that we can create kind of a network where we're doing well, but if we do well, our customers also do well. And I think just like the cryptocurrency space, if we get those incentives and behaviors correct, then we will do well when our customers do well, and that's what our aim is.
All right. Now, you've got to already have over 50 cryptocurrencies on Valour, and you've said you plan to launch more in due course. How much demand is there for those smaller tokens?
So right now, from a value perspective, about 55% of the entire market value of cryptocurrencies is Bitcoin itself. You know, Ethereum and Ripple come shortly or come after that, although there's quite a big jump between them. So on the tail end, there's much, much less liquidity of those cryptocurrencies than we're talking about in Bitcoin, for example. But one of the important things about Valour is that we want to stay crypto agnostic. So we believe in the crypto asset class. We really don't know what the future holds. We do believe that people are going to be buying and selling. And through that process, there'll be a discovery of where demand is coming from and where it's going to. So the reason we want to provide a lot of choice is we don't want to dictate what we think is the best cryptocurrency. We're a platform. You can come, you can buy, and you can sell. The customers and the public should dictate which ones do well. So what we're trying to do is provide as much possibility for the public to come and express their desires about which cryptocurrencies they think have value, and to do that on our platform. So that's kind of the short of it. But to your point, the tail end, the liquidity is much lower than the larger cryptocurrencies.
So the cryptocurrencies you have on the platform at the moment, are those based on market capitalization, or is there another criteria you're applied to?
So there are a few things. So because of our partnership with Bittrex, so we take a subset of their cryptocurrencies and tokens. They have quite a stringent listing process. So we do look at market cap. We look at, and that's generally correlated with the demand anyway from the public. At the moment, we are not listing any security tokens. So anything that could be viewed as a security in the eyes of the law, we're not listing at the moment. We do have the potential to list them in the future, and we may well do that.
So what is a security token? Is it something like Monero, or is it something else?
No. So basically, thanks. Let me take a step back, actually. So generally, cryptocurrencies can be divided into different types. If you look at Bitcoin, Bitcoin doesn't give you any claim to anything. It's a digital token. Take it or leave it, buy it or sell it. It's got a market price, but it doesn't entitle you to anything. It doesn't promise you anything. It's literally just a token. It's kind of like a coin of gold. You know, gold is a lumpy, shiny piece of metal. You want it or you don't want it, but that's all it is. It doesn't entitle you to anything. And that's juxtaposed to a security, and a security in the financial markets is a claim on an underlying cash flow or an underlying asset or something else, but it gives you a contractual right to the ownership of something else. So if you think about your stocks are all securities. If you think about a bond can also be a security. It gives you access to an underlying cash flow. So there are certain cryptocurrencies or crypto tokens, I should say, that are classified as securities. And that means that really, while they're issued on a blockchain, they derive their underlying value from an underlying cash flow or asset, for example. So that's not what Bitcoin is, for example. So the reason that we're steering clear of the security tokens right now is that there's a lot of clear guidance about securities right now in the market. You need to be an exchange according to the Financial Markets Act in South Africa, for example. In the United States, you need to go and report these transactions to the SEC, mm-hmm. Securities and Exchange Commission. So we don't want to do that yet. We're taking a very conservative approach. We want to make sure that we're kind of walking the line with the regulators together. And right now we think that there's too much uncertainty to do with security tokens themselves. So we've said, let's just provide cryptocurrencies that are not securities to our customers at the moment. Hmm.
I was interested. I see on your website it says you're using artificial intelligence and machine learning, specifically around identity validation.
Correct.
How does that work?
Great question. So what we've done is we have in the back end the ability. Well, let me actually take you through that process, the registration process. So effectively, we don't have any branches. So people, this is completely online. So we have a challenge here because we know that there's identity fraud. We know that somebody might actually legitimately have your license or your ID book. They've stolen it, but they're not you. So we could take a picture of your ID, but that doesn't really help us because we don't know if that's the actual person behind it. So what you do is you come onto our platform. Effectively, we'll ask you to take a picture of your ID, and we accept right now ID books, passports, and driver's licenses at the moment. Once you take a picture of that, then we'll ask you to take a video of yourself or take a selfie of yourself. And what we'll do once we have those two pieces of information is A, we'll validate that the ID is actually legitimate. And there are a bunch of checks to see if there's any tampering to the ID. There are what are called checksums at the bottom of the ID where it's not visible to the human eye, but you can check to see if something is valid. So A, we check if the ID is valid. Once the ID is valid, there's always a picture associated with the ID. So then we look at the video that we've done or the selfie. And the video is actually very interesting because we ask you to do certain things. Oh. Like we'll ask you to say certain numbers or to move your head in a particular way. So you can't really go onto Facebook and download your buddy's video that's there that's doing exactly what we're asking you to do. The chances of that are infinitesimally small. So what we do then is we take images and frames from your video or your picture, and we compare that algorithmically with the picture from the ID. If there's a facial match, then you get verified automatically. If there isn't, then it gets flagged and there needs to be human intervention. But right now, I think about 75 to 80% of our customers are getting validated automatically. And what that means is from the time that you come onto the platform to the time you get verified, it's about 5, 6, 7 minutes, which is actually quite revolutionary for the industry.
And the remaining 20% human vetting.
Yeah, so unfortunately, that probably takes us a few hours to do. Yeah. Again, it's much better than days.
Yeah.
But there's human intervention just to see what's going on. And actually, typically, the reason for that is that people will take a picture of their ID, and actually, it's just blurry. Mm. So no human nor machine can actually read the information on the ID. So we actually need to go back to the customer, ask for a new picture.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious, if I'm interested in trading in cryptocurrencies, why would I use Valour as opposed to going onto an international exchange? I mean, it's all digital anyway.
Correct.
Could I not go onto Bittrex in the US and trade there? Are there disadvantages as a South African for doing that, and reasons I should work through a South African exchange?
Great question. So we want to be an onboard or an on-ramp from the traditional financial system to the new financial system, or to a new paradigm, let's say. I think we also need to stay humble, because cryptocurrencies are certainly not a new financial system from the perspective of taking over the old right now or as yet. So we offer the opportunity for people to use their RANs in South Africa to buy and sell cryptocurrencies. Now, international platforms don't have that feature. So you can go onto Bittrex or other platforms, but it's actually quite a cumbersome process if you don't have any cryptocurrencies. So A, you would need to open up an account. Oftentimes, if you try to open an account with an exchange in a different country, they simply won't allow you on because they don't serve the country that you're in. Let's assume that you are successful in opening an account. Then you actually need to get some of your monetary value into that exchange. And if you don't have any cryptocurrencies, the only way to do that is to get fiat money or government money, dollars, rands, etc. And the only way to do that is to use the current banking system. So if you do that, first of all, you wait about 2-3 days for your money to get there. You're paying all the fees to the bank. You're getting charged generally quite a bad rate by the bank in any case. So by the time your money gets there, you're 1.5%, 2%, maybe 3% down, and you've wasted 2 or 3 days of your life. So our target market right now is South Africans, although we also accept customers from 192 different countries around the world. And those customers right now can trade cryptocurrencies crypto to crypto. But our South African customers will be able to deposit rands and actually buy cryptocurrencies with their rands. And so that's what the thinking is right now, is just to ease that on-ramp between the traditional financial system of rands into cryptocurrencies. And we're hoping that we'll be able to onboard a bunch of different fiat currencies in the future as well.
You're specifically focused on South Africa, on a South African audience at the moment.
At the moment. Yeah.
Down the line, do you see yourself becoming a global exchange operating across the world?
Yeah, you know, I think if any new business in this day and age doesn't have their sights on the global platform, I don't think there's much hope for them, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're living in this world where our nation-state boundaries are really just figments of our imagination that unfortunately we've put, you know, made realities through our own social structures. But these entities called the nation state are going through a very difficult time, and they're not keeping up with the technology of the world. So it doesn't really make sense for us to focus on 55 million people in South Africa only. We've got a platform, people can trade on it from any part of the world if you've got an internet connection. So the only reason we're starting with South Africa is it's a starting point. Our old system, i.e. the RAND system, is based on that geographic region.
Yeah.
But as we move forward, the world is our oyster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I think an important discussion to have when we're talking about cryptocurrency exchanges is security. We've seen international hacking incidents,
yeah.
Lots of money stolen.
Yeah.
What does Valour's security look like?
Wonderful question. So and then it's an extremely important question as well. So let me say from the outset that I'm going to share at a high level what we're doing. I can't obviously go into the details because that in itself would be a security breach. So in the cryptocurrency world, you have a series of different types of wallets. And actually, let me take it even a step further back. A, there's the security of the cryptocurrencies themselves. How do you store them? There's the security of your customer base, your information, the data there. There's the security of the logins and how to access your site. Making sure that there aren't any phishing attempts to people to try to get your customers' information, because actually that's one of the, probably the biggest breach is not the system itself, but it's actually our customers having had their information stolen and then accessing our systems with their credentials. So let's start with the cryptocurrency itself. So we have hot wallets and we have cold wallets. Hot wallets are basically online, I wouldn't call them vaults, but basically in cryptocurrency terms, you have what's called a private key. And a private key is the thing that gives you access to the value that you have on a global blockchain. So online wallets are basically when you have the private key that's online, and you need that. You need to have operational liquidity for your customers. As soon as they want to withdraw, you need to be able to actually give them the funds that are theirs. But then you have cold wallets, and cold wallets are completely offline machines that are used. They're based in vaults that are institutionalized, institutional grade vaults, geographically dispersed, and where actually biometrics are used to get physical access into these vaults to access those keys. And on top of that, you have what's called a multi-signature, which is you don't need to just get into one single vault. You need to get into a bunch of these different vaults at the same time to be able to sign transactions. So we've instituted all of that on the cold wallet side. We have the hot wallets, and then we're also partnering with Bittrex to share some of their security infrastructure. They've been in business for, you know, several years now. They've never been hacked. They have billions of dollars worth of cryptocurrencies under their control. So our partnership allows us to kind of access those leading security practices. And that's one of the things that we're bringing to our customers as well. It's really, really important, though, for people to understand the risks that we're talking about in the security space. There is no cryptocurrency exchange, no cryptocurrency custodian in the world, anywhere in the world, that can guarantee you 100% that your funds will never be compromised. That simply doesn't exist. And if anybody does claim that, you should probably run in the opposite direction. But what you can do is try to make it extremely difficult, that the probability of getting hacked becomes very, very low. So people need to realize that when you have any cryptocurrency on an exchange, there are risks with holding it on an exchange. But if you also take it off an exchange, there are also risks with holding it yourself. So a lot of people say, take your money off exchanges, don't put your cryptocurrency on exchanges, make sure you're the own custodian of your own private keys. But the fact of the matter is, if you are the own custodian of a private key and that key gets stolen or corrupted or whatever it is,
As has happened, we've seen this many times before, right?
You cannot reset that password with anybody else. So we like to just inform our customers of that trade-off, let them make the decision of what they think is best. We provide the opportunity for people to store their cryptocurrencies with us. We do everything in our power to make sure that it's as safe as possible. But we want to make sure our customers understand the risks and act accordingly.
Are there things consumers should be doing to protect themselves that, I mean, you're obviously putting a lot of security in place, but are there additional measures that consumers who, let's say, want to keep their cryptos in the exchange should be taking, apart from obviously doing things like avoiding obvious phishing attempts?
Yeah, of course. So the obvious phishing attempts is obviously there, but people are becoming very sophisticated in the way they do phishing as well. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of social engineering. So people always need to be aware of that and never give their information to anybody. Be very careful of that. The other thing is, what we've instituted, and this is what we require from the customer side, to your question, is something called two-factor authentication. Mm-hmm. So we have automatic 2FA on our side based on SMS 2FA. So whenever you do a transaction that you want to withdraw, or you want to take cryptocurrency out of your account, or you're logging in for the first time after a long time, or from a new device, etc., we will send you an SMS to confirm that it's actually you trying to get access to your account. Now, we encourage our customers to actually implement what we call a 2FA from an authenticator app, mm-hmm. like Google Authenticator, or there are a few others. We cannot do that on behalf of our customers. The customer needs to do that from their own side. And so we really encourage customers to do that, not just for cryptocurrency exchanges, but for their emails as well. Because if people get access to your email, then they can reset passwords, etc., and pretend that they are you when they're not, and try to get access into your account. So I think be just very cautious, be very careful, mm-hmm. implement all the security features you can, including 2FA. Just be wise, try to be wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I must say, I got a bit paranoid about security about 2 years ago. I started using a password manager and then implemented two-factor authentication on anything that allowed it.
Good. I'm glad you do that, because most people don't. And most people don't even know what 2FA is.
Most people have the same password across
most people have the same password, and most of people have a very horrible password as well. So, and also, I think it's important because we're seeing more and more a lot of hacks of huge institutions where people have access to a lot of these passwords. And in the worst case scenario, these passwords are being kept in plain text.
Yes.
Now, that's horrible practice for any exchange. You should always be hashing them, what's called salting them, etc., so that you can't get access to the underlying password. So use unique passwords, use difficult passwords. Password manager is always a good idea as well.
So let's talk about the cryptocurrency market in broad terms. 2018 has not been a good year for Bitcoin or any crypto, for that matter. There may have been one or some, two small ones that perhaps outperformed.
Correct.
But there's blood on the floor this year. Where do you see Bitcoin and other cryptos going in 2019 and beyond? Is the worst of the pain behind the market now, or do you think there's more to come?
I know exactly where it's going, Duncan. No, I'm just joking.
You can tell me after we finish recording.
So 2018 has been a very difficult year for the cryptocurrency markets, especially for people that kind of bought in at the peak of the hype, at the end of 2017, early 2018. And, you know, the cryptocurrency market overall is down 87% right now, if you look at the market value of all cryptocurrencies.
Wow.
And a bunch of them are down 95% and more. And these are some of the smaller ones that really didn't have any value proposition in the first place. So where we're going, it's very difficult to tell. And if anybody says they know where you're going, I think, again, be very careful about what those people are telling you. Nobody can say. We're at about $3,500 per Bitcoin right now, having come down from $20,000 at the beginning of the year. And that's a steep decline, right? Over 70%, nearly 80%. So I think it's very difficult to say what the short term holds. Our view is that these type of corrections are not new.
They've happened many times before.
Mm. Obviously, the magnitudes of these corrections, this is the biggest one because it's, you know, it went to such a big amount, or such a large amount from a network value perspective. But we think that it's actually healthy what's happening. And it's unfortunately, a lot of people have lost money. But with everybody, I always say, if you're entering this space, I say two things. Number one, put in as much as you're willing to lose, but enough that will keep you paying attention.
Is it like gambling?
You see, gambling is you really have, there's no fundamentals, right? It's a purely odds. It's just, you know, what are the odds? And the house is generally, it's in the house's favor and the odds are against you. So for me, it's not about gambling at all. Like, there is a thesis here. There is a rationale of why this asset class will take off. Is buying gold gambling, for example, right? And the reason I ask that is that you can imagine back to when gold was first discovered. If someone had to buy it, say, and they were using coconuts, let's say, they went to the market, someone said, hey, I'll give you one coconut for that shiny metal. Someone said, no, I'll give you two coconuts. Right there, you got 100% volatility. So I think what we're experiencing right now is tremendous volatility, which I don't think will go away anytime soon. And what humanity is trying to figure out is, what are these things worth? There is no other way of valuing them except for the brute force of supply and demand, buyers and sellers. So our view is that some of the fundamentals is that this technology is purely digital. It's appropriate for a digital age. It views the world as one, so that it doesn't pay any heed to national borders. It gives people choice as to whether they want to hold that value themselves or use a trusted institution like Valor. And it's programmatically scarce. It's the first time we've had digital scarcity. When you look at some of these fundamental attributes, it may look horrible that we've gone down from $20,000 to $3,500 for the price of a Bitcoin right now. But we shouldn't forget that, you know, less than 10 years ago, the price of one of these things was not even a US cent. You know, in 2011, it hit parity with the dollar. So between 2011 to 2018, 7 years, you've gone from $1 to $3,500. you got to keep that in perspective. There isn't any asset class in the world that's achieved that type of appreciation. So people are looking at the last few months and they, oh my God, this is going to the, you know, this is going to die. But if you take a step back, look at the evolution of money, which was the topic of our previous podcast, there are many reasons that dictate or that suggest that this currency asset class could go well beyond what it is today. So if you're in it for speculative reasons, I would encourage you to take a step back, because you probably are gambling if your time horizon is a few days. If your time horizon is years or decades, I think there are fundamentals here that that are very encouraging and promising towards advancing the plight of humanity.
Just as a quick aside before we close out, sure. Do you take technical charting analysis seriously at all? I know a lot of people look at it and they say, well, no, it's hit this 200-day moving average, or on this basis, it has to move up or down from this position. Do you do you give any credence to that?
So it's a really interesting question. So TA, or technical analysis, the way I see it is that it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Mm-hmm. If you have enough people that believe in it, then it's gonna work, right? So if enough people have the same kind of metrics and they say, oh goodness, there's going to be resistance or support level right over here, and when it hits that level, it's going to bounce and that's going to be the bottom, and you have enough people thinking like that, well, then the action in the market is that enough traders, when that price actually gets reached, go in and buy it. And what happens? The price goes up and there is a bounce. So is there some truth, quote unquote, to technical analysis? Certainly, because there are enough people that believe it. In the long run, I think it's the fundamentals that dictate things. I was never a fan of TA, but kind of being in this space for many years now, you see that there is some truth to it. And it works, I think, better in the short term than the long term. Over the long term, I think it's the fundamentals that actually take hold.
Final question, and I think we've touched on it a bit during this discussion already, and I really do encourage anyone listening to this podcast to go and listen to the previous discussion I had with Fizama Sani. It really was a fascinating discussion on money and where we've come from and where we might be going. But do you still believe that in the long term, cryptocurrencies will be as transformative as you said in our previous discussion? Do you believe they're going to change the world still?
I do, undoubtedly. I think I have to have a level of humility with that statement. As I think everybody does, and say we don't know for sure. But when I look at the fundamentals and I look at our current monetary paradigm, I cannot see how our current paradigm, where every single time we cross a border, we tax each other and pay these taxes to intermediaries for the privilege of transacting with our brothers and sisters on the other side of the world, I cannot for the life of me see how that is a sustainable financial system. And when I look at any alternative that really views the world as one, cryptocurrencies at the moment are the only one, as the only asset class that I see recognizes the oneness of humanity. Is it going to be Bitcoin? Is it going to be Ether? Is it going to be any of these other cryptocurrencies that's going to be the cryptocurrency of the future? I really don't know. But the mathematical kind of intertwining of cryptography with finance, I think, is such a powerful concept. And I think from my perspective, my view hasn't changed. I'm very, very bullish about this asset class. And I think it will do great things for humanity.
Fizama Sani is CEO of the newly launched Valor.com. Thank you again for a fascinating discussion.
Thanks so much for having me, Duncan. Always a pleasure.